Welcome back to the Angletopia podcast, the podcast for people who love British travel, history, and culture. I'm your host, Jonathan Thomas, and today we're exploring one of England's most enchanting regions through the eyes of someone who knows it better than almost anyone else. I'm joined by Tom Burdett, owner and director of Stay Cotswold, a premier self-catering holiday cottage company operating in the heart of the beautiful Cotswolds. Tom is truly a Cotswolds born and bred. He spent his entire career in the region's property market, working his way up through 14 years in the state agency before transitioning into holiday lettings. In 2021, he joined the board of Stay Cotswold with an ambitious vision to evolve this well-established and much-loved brand into the leading independent holiday letting agent in the Cotswolds. What makes Tom's perspective so valuable is his unique combination of deep local roots, extensive property expertise, and intimate understanding of what draws visitors from around the world to this area of outstanding natural beauty. Today, we're diving into why international travelers are so captivated by the Cotswolds, how film and television have transformed local tourism, and why self-catering cottages remain the perfect base for exploring honey-colored villages, rolling hills, and centuries of English heritage. Whether you're planning your first visit to the Cotswolds or you're a seasoned traveler looking for insider tips, Tom's going to share everything from hidden gems to practical advice for making the most of your stay. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So at risk of having already done it in the introduction, can you give us the elevator pitch for Stay Cotswold?
We're an independent firm. We are based in the Cotswolds. We only market properties in the Cotswolds. And, we have two sides of it. For our owners, we look after their properties. We make sure that they perform as they should and that they have the right numbers of people in them. And for our guests, we make sure that they have a typical Cotswold experience and can access all the information that they need to have a lovely stay here.
That sounds nice. And we encourage people to deal locally when they visit places in England, because sometimes it feels like TripAdvisor and Airbnb ate the travel industry, but there's still many, many, many smaller operations that are just as good or better. So
absolutely. Exactly.
So you've been in Cotswolds property for your entire career. What originally drew you to this industry, and how has the region changed since you started?
Well, I love property. I love cottages. I love, period pretty houses. So I actually got into a estate agency originally, and I did that for 14 years, sold a lot of houses, both to people that wanted to use them as main homes and holiday homes as well. And then after 14 years, it was time for something new. And I moved on to holiday letting. I was approached by another holiday letting company to work for them. And subsequently, then we moved over to Stay Cotswold. I just enjoy, it's twofold, estate agency and holiday letting. There's some similarities in a way, with estate agency, you're finding someone's dream home. And in holiday letting, you're finding them, their dream holiday home, or the property to have a dream holiday within. So that's what first drew me to it. And the region, the beauty of the region is it hasn't changed. That's basically why people want to come here. It's I grew up in the 90s and early 2000s in the area, and it certainly wasn't as touristy at that point, but it was still very much the same as it is now. I suppose the only things that have changed, certainly changed for the good, in my opinion, is that there's a lot more to do. There's beautiful places to eat, great things to see, wonderful activities to do, and it's all kind of just a little bit more joined up.
So what was it like moving from selling houses to people to live in permanently to selling houses for holiday lettings? What surprised you the most about the vacation rental business?
I suppose, for me, the thing I really enjoy about it is kind of the instant gratification that you get, because when you are an estate agent, a house sale in England takes a long time to go through. So it takes a long time to find a buyer sometimes. So you can be working on something for months and months and months, and then you get that kind of gratification at the end, months later, when it goes through. Whereas with holiday cottages, if we list a holiday cottage and it goes live on the website today, it'll usually get a booking, quite often by the end of the day. And someone will be arriving and enjoying that house, within a week. So that's what I really love about it. And I guess what surprised me, I don't know why it surprises me, because it makes sense, but how happy and positive the people that we deal with in holiday letting are. Selling houses, it's a stressful time. So people, you don't always see the best of them. Whereas, you know, with holiday letting, it's people are going on holiday. What's not to like?
Yeah. And everything's turnkey and ready to be beautiful, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So when you joined Stay Cotswold in 2021, what was your sort of vision for evolving this well-established brand?
I think when we joined, we wanted to make it, and we wanted to be the best holiday letting company. We don't want to be the biggest, because I don't think that always makes you the best. We want to be the best in terms of the experience that we offer to guests, in terms of the service we offer to owners. And I feel that we've absolutely achieved that.
And so as somebody who's Cotswolds born and bred, how do you balance preserving the area's authentic character with meeting the demands of modern tourism?
It's a tricky one. I think the good thing about the Cotswolds is that, generally speaking, the locals are very supportive of the people that come here and the people that have holiday lets here. There are areas where locals are slightly less, welcoming of that. But in the Cotswolds, they absolutely see the importance of it. And I think they're quite proud to show off where they live. So so firstly, people are very welcoming, which is very, very good. In terms of, I think it's important to have visitors and have people spending money in the area. So by just bringing people to the area that want to enjoy it and can support these lovely small local businesses, then it's doing wonders for the area. So that's ultimately it. It's, we support it by bringing people here.
Yeah, it's a nice little virtuous cycle. It keeps people coming to the area and keeps it from being abandoned or economically deprived, because there's always an injection of new money in as people visit.
It does. It does. And if you come here now, I mean, it was always the case that the summer was a really busy time, and you could go to Stow-on-the-Wold or Boughton-on-the-Water in January or February or March, and it would be really quiet. And actually now it's become a year-round kind of destination where it won't be as busy in January and February, but you'll certainly still see people wandering around spending money in shops and cafes and restaurants.
Well, and we're big advocates of off-season travel in England, and especially the Cotswolds. When I first visited the Cotswolds, it was in between Christmas and New Year's, and it was, a comparatively dead time for tourism, but we had the places to ourselves, and it was enjoyable.
Yeah. And places don't shut down. I mean, yeah. This is the thing, because there's a lot of people that live here. I've lived here my whole life. There's a huge amount of people that actually live here. So it's not sort of so much that when the tourists leave, things close down and it's less enjoyable in the winter. I mean, everything's still going in the same way as it does in the summer. So you can have an experience at both ends of the year.
Now I'm going to ask you a controversial question. It's not on my list, so I'm sorry. How do you define the geographic area of the Cotswolds? Because there is a lot of debate over where the Cotswolds begins and ends. And a few months ago, I made the mistake of saying in a video that Gloucester is in the Cotswolds. And I was corrected by the social media commentary very quickly that it's actually not. It's next to the Cotswolds.
It is. Technically, typically, and correctly, it's the area of outstanding natural beauty.
Okay.
Which is defined by a border on a map. And you can see, if you type in the AONB of the Cotswolds, you'll see exactly what is and what isn't. And generally speaking, certainly on the west side, the Cotswold Hills define where it starts and ends. Becomes a little bit more tricky when you get out to the east and north and south and so on, but yeah, there is a well-defined AONB that covers it.
It's like Bath. I mean, it's built of Cotswold stone, but it's not really in the Cotswolds, but it's near the Cotswolds. It's like,
depends because there's the Cotswolds. There are places on the very edges of the Cotswolds that are the Cotswolds that perhaps don't feel so much like the Cotswolds. So I think when people say Cotswolds, what they're thinking of, generally speaking, is that honey stoned typical cottage with a little old centuries old village pub and a village green and all of that, and you can find that right across the region. But I think most people, when they're thinking of the Cotswolds, they're thinking of Boughton-on-the-Water, Stow-on-the-Wold, and that kind of North Cotswold little area.
And a lot of people don't realize the Cotswolds are big. I've made the mistake a couple times of driving from north to south or south to north, and it takes a long time. There's a lot there, and it's wide east to west. So you can, And I've been there probably a dozen times and I still haven't seen everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you can have a different experience depending on where you go. You know, the North Cotswolds now, there are a lot of things that are geared towards tourism, which is good. You know, I live in the North Cotswolds and I like the fact that there are these wonderful pubs that are very smart and you can have these kind of, you know, gastronomic experiences that you couldn't have 10 or 15 years ago. You can head down slightly more south and still get those experiences, but you can see just a different side to the Cotswolds, a less well-trodden path, I suppose. And actually, if you go down towards Stroud and the Slad Valley and around there, the scenery is actually more spectacular than you see in the North Cotswolds. You know, you have rolling hills in the North Cotswolds, and then you have some deep, steep valleys as you get down further south. So there's all sorts to see.
I will agree with you there. Having just spent last year, I was in that part of the Cotswolds. It is incredible. Around Stroud and Newark Park and all that. It was gorgeous. So, you know, as people are trying to spend their travel dollars here in America, when we think of self-catering, actually, we don't even call it self-catering. I don't know what we will call it, but renting a house or, you know, and Airbnb, actually, we would call it Airbnb. That's really they've kind of taken the brand and made it a generic term. So, what for Americans planning? Why? What sets Stay Cotswold apart from Airbnb and TripAdvisor and all the big operations owned by Expedia?
Yeah, I mean, we all market properties, so that's the similarity. You know, we're all pushing holiday homes in front of people, but that's about where the similarities end, really. You know, we're local people and we're on the ground. We have an office in Stow-on-the-Wold, and if you're visiting, then we would love it if people popped in and said hello. We can give them an insider's insight into what to do, where to go. If people have got kind of any concerns about things, then clearly they can get answers and support from us as well. So realistically, the main difference is we're local and we live and breathe the Cotswolds, and that's what we're about.
Well, and if there's a problem, they can pick up the phone and call you, whereas you can't get a hold of Airbnb for the life of anything.
Exactly. They can pick up the phone and call us, and they can actually come and speak to us face to face. And, you know, that's a wonderful thing as well.
So how do you curate your property portfolio? What makes a cottage Stay Cotswold worthy? I mean, I'm assuming do you have like a particular look and feel or a particular size requirement or location?
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, so it's me that does that. So we have 270 cottages across the Cotswolds, and I do take them all on. So I'm the first kind of, I have the first contact with that owner and with that property. And generally speaking, there's no strict formula. It's about quality. It's about look and feel, and clearly, geographically, certainly about being in the Cotswolds. So that's a key part of it as well. But, you know, what we tend to market is anything from apartments in old period buildings all the way through to country homes and farmhouses and everything in between. And ultimately, we want something generally that's stone, but it doesn't have to be, something that is actually still quite usable inside as well, you know, contemporary to a degree, but with a Cotswold nod towards it. The ideal property is a double fronted period cottage with roses around the door and a nice little gate that leads up the pathway to it with some lavender in the front garden, and you walk through the front door and then you've got a, you know, traditional shaker style kitchen, but that's beautifully painted and smart and usable with fridges and dishwashers and all the things that you'd expect from a modern house, and good sized rooms and plenty of bathrooms. So, you know, that's the ideal, and we're flexible on it, but we just want to know that whoever stays with us in whichever property it is, they're going to have a good time and they're going to be pleased that they chose that one. And that, as long as I feel it ticks that box, it comes on board.
Now, do the properties you list, are they traditionally exclusively holiday lets, or do people still like live in them, or how does that work?
So many, many of them are just pure holiday lets. So they are used for that purpose. But I would say a large portion of them are used to some degree by the owner as well. So some of them more than others. But generally speaking, that is one of the attractions of buying a holiday cottage in the Cotswolds. It's the fact that you can use it actually with us as often as you want to use it as an owner. There's no restrictions on that. And you can enjoy it. But then when you're not enjoying it, someone else can enjoy it.
That sounds nice. Best of both worlds, right? So tell us about some of the properties in your portfolio, because they range from cottages to castles to manor houses. Like, what are some of the most unique ones?
I mean, we've got some beautiful places. I mean, just off the top of my head. So down near Stroud, we've got a mini castle. It's actually a gatehouse. It's called the Gatehouse, in fact. And it's a lodge house to a large country house, basically. And back in Victorian times, it was styled into with little castlets on it, and styled into a sort of mini castle back in Victorian times. And and that's it. It's a one bed castle, basically, which is pretty special, which is really nice. Slightly larger ones. So in the grounds of a place called Ebrington Manor, we've got a Queen Anne property in the grounds there. It's called the Garden House on our website, and it's a sleep six, but it was built as a summer house in this manor house. And so it wasn't actually lived in originally, and then it was eventually converted into a property, but it's very, very pretty, and it's a Queen Anne style. So it's quite unique for the Cotswolds. As I say, occupies a position in the grounds of a 14th century manor. So it's pretty special.
Yes, I'm already looking them up, trying to, when's it available? Yeah. So any other really unique ones that are, that, you know, people, America, that would really appeal to Americans?
I mean, you know, I would say that the vast majority, they appeal to a lot of people, certainly would appeal to Americans, I'm sure. So the vast majority of what we've got would appeal to Americans. I think if you're looking for a stay whereby you have access to lots of amenities on the doorstep, then choosing something in one of the main sort of what we would call towns, but I mean, they're large villages, really, would make sense. So we have some beautiful properties in Chipping Campden and Broadway and Stowe and Bourton-on-the-Water and Chipping Norton and places like that. But yes, we've got some lovely ones, but too many to talk about on the individual basis.
So moving on to sort of international visitors, what specifically draws international visitors to the Cotswolds over other UK destinations, do you think?
I think it's the unspoilt nature of it, firstly. I think film and television has put it on a lot of people's radars. It's quite a romantic sort of feeling about the Cotswolds generally. I think, you know, if you've watched films like The Holiday back in the day, you know, it promotes this kind of feeling that you're going to this kind of almost magical sort of place. And I think, you know, it is for a lot of people. It's what people assume is traditional and typical England, I think. And that's, I think, why people go there.
How has the Downton Abbey effect and other TV film productions impacted patterns in your area? Or, like, is there specific places that fans of these shows like to go?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Down around Bampton, you can go down and see where they filmed Downton Abbey. And if you go down to Tetbury, you can see where they filmed Rivals, that was recently out. I mean, so many of them now. So I think people like that. I think people like to visit some of these places because they've seen them on the telly. But there's probably many, many more things that are actually filmed here than maybe your audience would be aware of. I mean, I don't know whether, for example, anybody watches a program called Father Brown, which was very, very popular here. And certainly I know was very popular in Asia. I don't know about in America, but you know, that's filmed in a little village called Blockley. And lots of people do go there to see that. And in fact, I think, I don't know if they still film it there, but I've certainly seen them filming it there. So it's, yeah.
Yeah, Father Brown has been very popular on our public broadcasting network. That's where a lot of British TV is aired because it's cheap to import. So they aired on public television. Father Brown is usually on at some point today, every day in this country.
All right, okay. There you go. So I think, yeah, these sorts of things do draw people here. And I think the biggest one, which you may be going to talk about a bit later on, is Clarkson's Farm, which is a huge, huge show. And when I go on holiday and I meet people and I talk to them and they say, well, where are you from? And I'll say, a little place near Chipping Norton called Churchill. And they'll say, oh, never heard of it. I'll say, do you know where Clarkson's Farm is? Diddley Squat? And say, yes. And I say, well, I live 2 miles from that. So that puts it on the map. They know exactly where I'm talking about then.
Well, yeah, we're going to get to that. So, So what seasonal patterns do you see with international visitors, and do you see them wanting to avoid weather or plan around weather or local events or anything like that?
I think, as we said earlier, that the Cotswolds has something to offer all year round. And ultimately, if you come in the winter, you'll have a different but just as good an experience as if you visit in the summer. So we do see international tourism peaking through the summer months, but then we see domestic tourism peaking through the summer months as well. But the weather, in honesty, in terms of extreme weather, is not a huge factor in the Cotswolds. You know, we do get some snow in the winter sometimes, but not every year. If we do get snow, it's very rare that it would disrupt travel plans for more than a few hours. So there shouldn't be any concerns over anything like that. But if you come to the Cotswolds in the summer, you'll see, lovely long rolling hills that are green and beautiful and luscious. If you come in the winter, you'll see everything a little bit damper and a bit muddier, but you'll still get to go back to your cottage and sit in front of a nice warm log fire or in a pub having a pint next to a fire, and that's something to experience as well.
Sounds nice. Yeah, and that's what we tell people, is that even England does have winter, but it doesn't have the extremes that that American winters have, at least in the Midwest or the Northeast. So while it may be cold, it's not like cold as Americans would perceive it. You're not bundling up and head to toe and goose down to stay warm. The weather is very mild. You mentioned Clarkson's Farm. Clarkson's Farm kind of gives a television version of the weather, because it gets wet, it gets cold, but it's they play it up for dramatic purposes, I think, at least.
It's interesting, because as I say, we experience the weather, and then a year later, Clarkson's Farm comes out, and then you think, oh yeah, it was quite wet last year. But he's been quite unfortunate, because it seems like he's either had torrential downpours for a whole season or drought for a whole season every time. And it is a little like that, but it doesn't necessarily feel like that when you're here. There's good days and bad days, but you're right. It's certainly not as cold as what you would experience in certain parts of America. It's fairly mild.
So why do you think self-catering remains so popular when there are so many luxury hotels in the Cotswolds now?
Well, one of it is cost. Typically for if you're comparing a holiday cottage with the price of staying in a luxury hotel for the same amount of time. And certainly if you're coming, as a group of four or six or more, you would have to get multiple hotel rooms. So from a cost perspective, holiday cottages cost less, for sure. And you get more for your money. You've got so much more space. And just because you're there, it doesn't mean that you have to cook for yourself and you can't go out for meals and still experience all that sort of stuff, because you can. I suppose the only thing you don't get, someone doesn't come into your room and make your bed in the morning. But if you can get over that, then holiday cottages they give you more freedom, they give you more space, and generally at a better price point as well.
One of people's biggest complaints about Airbnb is that when you rent one of those, you get like a laundry list of do's and don'ts and tasks from the owner. Is it like that with, say, Cotswold, or do you kind of just handle everything?
Yeah, it's pretty much all handled. There might be some do's and don'ts. For example, some houses won't allow pets, so you can't bring your pet with you.
Well, that's reasonable.
That's just reasonable. But there aren't too many do's and don'ts, no. Generally, every property has a property manager, somebody that knows the house, knows the area, knows the intricacies of that property. So you have somebody on call that if you've got a problem, you can speak to somebody and they will help you. And when you leave, you generally, as long as you're leaving the house nicely, we're not expecting you to clean it top to bottom and hand it back better than it was handed to you. It's just, as long as it's handed back in a nice condition as you found it, then somebody comes in and deals with everything after you've gone.
You don't have to remember bin day, right?
no, not bin day. No, we've property managers look after the bins.
Yeah, I remember we stayed in self-catering once, and we had to manage the bins. And in America, the bins are very simple. There's one for garbage, there's one for recycling, that's it. Like, you don't have to sort it or anything. It just all goes in one or the other. And so I've having to figure out which bin for what. It was a cultural experience.
It depends where you go. It is a cultural experience, even for me. I live in West Oxfordshire, so this side, we have a simple bin solution, which is, you have two different recycling options, which is basically glass and then everything else and normal waste. That's pretty much it. If you go to other counties, then perhaps you have to start separating your cardboard as well and plastics and things. So depends where you are.
Like going on holiday to work.
Yes, exactly.
So... what advantage does having a cottage base offer for exploring the consoles compared to being in a big hotel or elsewhere?
I think you typically get a more Cotswold experience by being in a cottage because it's like you're living there. You're on a street surrounded by other people that do live there. So you get to interact with people a lot more. And people generally in the Cotswolds are very friendly as well, which, I have friends and people that come out of London to come and visit the Cotswolds. And it's one of the things that even they say that people are generally in the countryside are a lot more friendly. Not the people in London are unfriendly. They just won't interact with you so much as they will when you're, in the Cotswolds. So yeah, I think by staying in a cottage, you get a much more traditional and typical experience, an authentic experience really. And there's nothing that you can't, that you can't do from a cottage that you can do from a hotel. If you don't want to drive, which you don't have to, I mean, it's very useful to have a car in the Cotswolds because there's lots of places to go and see. But yeah, as tourism has continued to take off, there are more taxis around. There's a great company called Rural Rides that we work quite closely with, and another and part of their same company called Cotswold Tours. If you pre-arrange it, they'll take you all over the Cotswolds to see things. And you can do that from a hotel or you can do it from a holiday cottage.
And so how that kind of feeds into my next question, actually. How do you help guests make the most of their cottage stay, especially first-time visitors?
Well, the information that they're provided in their pre-arrival information is important because it tells them about the house, but it tells them about the areas. And typically, it also includes some recommendations from the owner. So the owner spends a lot of time at the house, or has done, and therefore they have their own personal recommendations of things to do. So we certainly, that is just a standard that everybody that stays in our cottages gets this information prior to them coming down so that they can start to decide what they want to do. We also have a Stay Cotswold Club. So everybody that stays with us gets access to special offers and deals through lots of local businesses, that whether that be farm parks to certain restaurants and pubs and all sorts of different things. So we provide that sort of information, but also people can, as I say, pop into the office or call us or speak to the property manager of the property and get information about what they want to do. And if they need a taxi number, we can supply it, or the property manager can supply it. So we're there to allow people to enjoy their time, as efficiently as possible, so they don't have to be working lots of things out before they come.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of those pre-travel packets from property companies, because I read them at least half a dozen times before I arrive. So
yeah,
I'm an local expert by the time I get there.
Yeah, and that's what we want. We want people to hit the ground running. You don't want to arrive and then have to start Googling and working out what we're going to do. You want to get excited about your holiday before you get there. So we send this information out prior to arrival.
Speaking of internet, generally, as someone who runs an internet business, this information is particularly relevant for me. How's the internet connectivity in a lot of these cottages?
All of our houses have Wi-Fi, and internet is good here really now. A lot of our properties are on what's called, we have Giga Clear here. I don't know if it's fiber. Nice. So a lot of houses nowadays have very fast internet, much faster than when I was growing up. And quite interestingly, you would just suspect that the smaller villages would have the slower internet. And in actual fact, the Giga Clear was introduced to the smaller villages first in most cases. So they're even better connected. So yeah, no problem with that.
And watching your file upload right here, I can confirm you have very fast Wi-Fi.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you touched on this a little bit, but I want to kind of deep dive into this. Staying in self-catering is a different type of travel than staying in hotels. And most Americans, they kind of need a car when they do it, and especially in the Cotswolds. So how do you encourage Americans to put aside their fears for driving in the UK?
I do know that Americans some are fearful of it. I've driven in America and it's a very different experience. So I get that and I can understand why it could be daunting, particularly because of the narrower roads. But it's one of those things. I encourage people to give it a go because it's not bad. It's not that difficult once you've experienced it. I mean, top tips are stay on the left-hand side for sure. Go steady around the country lanes because there are tractors and horses and cyclists and people mooching around. But the speed limit's pretty low. It's 20 to 30 miles an hour in most cases. So you're not expected to be driving too fast around those sorts of narrow roads. I say give it a go, and the other thing is if you're faced at a red light, stop. I know in America you sort of feed right onto certain turnings even if you're at red. You don't do that in England, so that's probably my top tip.
we really try to encourage our fellow Americans to drive, because it's once you've done it, it's actually not that difficult. A lot of the rules are very similar. Just read the AA road manual before you go and you're fine. Just learn all the signs and keep to the speed limit. Never speed, because they will find you in America and give you a ticket. So not that I know that from firsthand experience.
No, I would say, give it a go. I mean, it just unlocks so much of the area that you otherwise wouldn't see. And if you come and stay in a hotel and you don't drive, you'll see some key sites, you might well do. But it's very difficult there to explore the sort of the smaller places, the off the beaten track little places. And there's so much to the Cotswolds. Almost every village has a little pub. Some of them are kind of offer this gastronomic experience and they're really well known, but some of them are just traditional little inns that sell beer that's brewed just down the road, and you don't necessarily see that if you haven't got a car.
And we'd like to tell the visitors that you can take the train to the Cotswolds, but getting around the Cotswolds on the train is really kind of impractical. It's not well served by train internally, and then trying to rely on buses is not ideal because the schedules are very unreliable. So your best bet is to either drive or to rely on taxis. And we love local taxis. They're great. They're also a great use of local tourist information, and they're usually very flexible. But to have the best experience, we just get a car and drive. It's not that bad.
Get a car. Absolutely.
So if let's say you moved away from the Cotswolds and you had been away for many years, and you were coming back for a long weekend, what would be your must-see Cotswolds itinerary?
If I only had a short period of time, where would I go? I think you've got to experience some of the main hubs. So I think you've got to visit Stow-on-the-Wold. It's a traditional town with a lot of history. The Battle of Stow was there back in the English Civil War. There's some history to it. It's interesting. I would say it's probably quite a nice thing to visit Diddley Squat, seeing as most people have seen it online and read about it and watched the programs. It's quite interesting, but there's not too much to see there, so it's only a couple of hour job. Blenheim Palace is pretty special over in Woodstock, so it's out towards Oxford, but not far from here. It's a Baroque or Baroque palace, beautiful place, amazing grounds. Highclere, interesting. You can go and see where King Charles resides, and you can go to Arboretums down in that area as well. So there's lots to see. If you're looking for a slightly larger town experience, but not too large, then Cirencester's a nice place to visit as well. It's a town, but it's a traditional more Cotswold town, and there's quite a Roman influence in places there as well, which of course there is throughout the area. And then I think you've got to go to, you've got to go to some smaller villages as well, off the beaten track ones like Snow's Hill, beautiful village. It's actually where they filmed part of Bridget Jones' diary all those years ago. But Snow's Hill, Stanton, beautiful. Broadway, lovely. Chipping Camden, lovely. I mean, there's so many places to go, but I think visit a main hub like a Stow-on-the-Wold and a Bourton-on-the-Water. Absolutely Bourton-on-the-Water. I actually grew up in Bourton-on-the-Water. And although, again, it is touristy, it's so, so pretty with the river that runs through and the lovely little bridges. And, it is amazing. Quite unique.
Venice of the Cotswolds, as they call it.
That's right. The Venice of the Cotswolds, yeah. But it's definitely worth a visit. And actually, Bourton-on-the-Water, in my view, is really worth a visit if you go out of season, because it's so much quieter and it is a lovely, lovely place.
Well, and there's just a lot to see and do there. The people that there's the car museum. There's plenty of tea rooms. There's just looking at it because it's gorgeous. There's plenty of walks around the area, especially walking the upper or lower Slaughter. Like there's lots to do.
Yeah, absolutely. There is so much to do in that respect. And if anybody's visiting and they're interested in, things going back a bit further, Iron Age settlements and roundhouses and that sort of thing. There's a huge amount of history around of that. And there are some walks that you can do out across the water meadows that loop round to an old Iron Age settlement. And there's some kind of interesting boards about it and, things to see. So it depends. There's something for everybody, to be honest.
So as most of the listeners to this podcast are Americans, is there any specific advice you give Americans on dining or cultural differences that they should expect in the Cotswolds that may be different from the rest of England?
I don't know about different from the rest of England, but the differences, I think, between America and England, dining experiences, firstly, tips are generally included as a service charge already. So whilst tipping can be encouraged if you've had a particularly good meal, it's generally included anyway. But I think it's worth exploring the higher end of the dining spectrum in the Cotswolds. And there are some wonderful pubs that have, some fantastic chefs at them, which is great. But I think it's also worth experiencing the more traditional ones as well. There's a brewery nearby that dates back many, many, many years called Donington Brewery. And they own a lot of pubs. I think it must be 18 or 19 pubs in little villages. And they tend to offer a much more kind of traditional experience. Not that they don't do fine dining in some of them, or not fine dining, but not lovely dining in some of them. But there's certainly a more traditional experience, traditional ales brewed locally. I think you've got to experience it all.
So what are some myths that you find Americans kind of believe about?
I don't know. I think a lot of the time people think that we're, that everybody that lives here are kind of country bumpkins. I think we do get that impression sometimes, but we're really not now. We are well connected to the Western world, so we're not quite like that.
You're practically a London suburb at this point.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think myths is a difficult one because, everybody that comes here are always so polite. And they would never say that, we think that you're all, country bumpkins or walk around in Wellingtons all the time. But I do think that perhaps that is the way that some people think about it. But I don't know. It's a difficult one.
So we've mentioned it a couple times already, but the popularity of Clarkson's Farm has introduced a whole new interest in the Cotswolds in America. Have you guys capitalized on that at all?
We have, yes. Yeah, we've certainly seen an uptake in bookings in that sort of area. I think, we on our website, there are some blogs about it and some connections with it. And in fact, I mentioned earlier on one of our Stay Cotswold Club, where you get a special deal. Well, one of those deals is with Hawkston Brewery, which is, of course, his beer. So we have some connections there. In fact, where you're speaking to me from now is the village with the Checkers pub in it. And the Checkers is the pub that is always featured on Clarkson's Farm. And that's where I live. So I'm fortunate enough to see them quite regularly, all of them. Yes. In fact, I would class Gerald as a bit of an acquaintance, and I've known him for a while. So
can you understand him?
Yeah, just about.
Have you been to the Farmer's Dog, the new pub?
I've not been yet. No. We were actually talking about this a couple of days ago, and I really must do. I've just not found the time at the moment, and I think I'll wait for the popularity to die down. And sometimes I drive past, and it looks quite busy, and I think I'll wait another day before I do that. So
just remember your own ketchup, because they don't have any.
Of course, they don't. No, that's right.
Apparently that's going to change, though. Some guy on social media claims he has made 100% British ketchup, so we'll see if he succeeds in getting it in the pub.
Well, hopefully.
Have What do you have any specific tips for people who want to visit Diddley Squat? Because I know the roads can get quite busy and it's very popular and you can end up waiting in line a lot there.
Yeah, I mean, they now have got parking there. So they're not queuing up down the sides of the road as they were and parking on the verges. So actually that's alleviated a lot of the problems there, and it was definitely the right way to go. So the parking is not so much of a problem and the queue's not so much of a problem, but you will still queue to get in. But, you know, it's still all part of the experience, isn't it? You know, you're in the area, it's nice. And I would say that once you've been, do pop down into Chadlington and go down to the there's a farm shop or a village shop there called Chadlington Quality Foods, which featured on one of the early shows, and you know, you can get some actual useful items from there if you need any. And there's a butcher's next door as well, so certainly would experience that whilst you're there.
Well, that's the nice thing about self-catering, is when you can cook for yourself, you can go to all these lovely little farmers markets and get fresh meat and fresh produce and cook an amazing meal that you can't necessarily get in a restaurant. So that's
right. I mean, you know, there are so many farm shops that have opened up around here now selling produce from the land around them. Lots of the towns around and even some of the small villages have butchers with, again, locally produced meat and some vegetables and things. So, yeah, I, again, another reason to self-cater. Because, yes, you can still go out and you can go to the pubs and the restaurants and experience that. But it's still nice to buy some local produce and create your own meal, even barbecue. You know, most of our properties have barbecues if they've got a garden.
Well, Americans love a good barbecue. So that's, there you go, guys. You can grill your own steaks and burgers to your heart's content in the heart of the Cotswolds.
You can.
So, finally, for my last question, if you could only recommend one place or one experience in the Cotswolds that everybody visit, what would it be?
You got to go to Bourton on the Water, I think. I grew up there, and perhaps I'm biased, but it's such a pretty village with the river and the little bridges and things to do and lovely little cottages. And yes, it is quite touristy, and there are a lot of people around there, particularly in the summer, and it will be busy. But you know, I would certainly say you've got to experience, you got to see Bourton on the Water. I used to go on holiday when I was younger. I still do, but when I was younger, and people would ask where you're from, and I would say Bourton on the Water, and 9 times out of 10 people knew what Bourton on the Water was and knew where it was. So I think it's very well known for good reason. Alternatively, if you want a slightly quieter experience, go to Bybury. Bybury is like a mini Bourton on the Water with fewer tourists. You've got some pretty things to see, some nice little walks around, and you've got Arlington Row there, which actually features, I think, on the British passport.
Well, I couldn't agree more. So Americans, go to Bourton on the Water, go to Bybury, go to the whole Cotswolds. Just, you'll love it.
Come here.
So, yeah. What a fantastic conversation that was. Thank you for joining us on the Angletopia podcast, Tom. We'll link to Stay Cotswolds website in the show notes, along with Tom's top recommendations for exploring the Cotswolds, from must-see villages to hidden gems off the beaten path. Whether you're dreaming of a cozy cottage retreat or already planning your next British adventure, Tom's insider knowledge gives you everything you need to experience the Cotswolds like a local. And if you enjoyed this episode of the Angletopia podcast, please subscribe, like, or comment. It really helps us reach more British enthusiasts like you. And if you love the Angletopia podcast, please consider joining the Friends of Angletopia Club, where you can get early access to new episodes and connect with fellow travelers who share your passion for all things British. Join us next time as we continue discovering the people, places, and stories that make Britain such an endlessly captivating destination to explore. Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you.